Live from Pyongyang, it is Criterion Deep Dives with Robbie Yankish, Logan Lukacs, and Mike Mullaney. Hello, everyone. This is Criterion Deep Dives. I have with me former guests of the show, Robbie Yankish. Hello, Robbie.
Hi. I think I'm the guest who's been on most, so it's very great to be back for a third time.
Yes, Robbie's here for a third time, and Logan here for a second time. Hello, Logan.
You might remember me from Empire of Passion.
And I mentioned the capital of North Korea from where we're broadcasting because the film that we watched today is a film called Joint Security Area. It's a South Korean film, but it takes place on the border of those two nations, South Korea and North Korea. So we're going to talk about that one. But first, we just wanted to chat a little bit about a current film that Robbie just mere minutes ago finished watching. Robbie, do you want to tell our listeners what movie that is?
What movie did you watch, Robbie?
I just watched the excellent Nomadland.
Nomadland. I watched that a week ago. You know what? I'm glad you guys gave me credit for having already watched it. I don't know if you guys even asked me.
Well, yes, I just assumed.
I assume a lot of films with you. I assume a ton of films.
I don't have anything else going on, and it's what I would normally be doing. So.
I know that you have a huge crush on Frances McDormand, so I just figured that
Not untrue.
12 o'clock on February 21st, February 19th, whenever it came out, you just press play. So
I did watch it release night.
Yeah. So I saw this movie back in January when some of these theaters were doing like these virtual screening rooms, which is also how Robbie and I watched Minari through A24. They had their own screening rooms, but I watched Nomadland, I think back in January at some point, or December, something like that. And it was an awesome experience. It was like one of these things where you have a 4-hour window to watch it. And I was at home at my parents' house, and my little brother was watching it with me, and we were like trying to squeeze it in. We couldn't tell if it was going to like cut us off or not. And it actually like did tell us, like, thank you. Like 25 minutes into the movie, it was like, your preview has ended or whatever. And we were just like flipping out, but then we just had to refresh it. But this is like an interesting experience doing that sort of like night of thing and having that window to watch it. But now it's out on Hulu for everyone to see. So, which is an awesome thing.
So I guess my question for you now, Mike, is do you feel like a freaking chump, dude?
For what?
You paid for that?
For paying for this movie, dude?
No, man. I was able to. I had the foreknowledge. I was telling everyone for years how great Nomadland.
Well, you are an influencer. But no, I agree. I maybe we can get to our thoughts on these virtual screenings in a little bit. But
have you done one, Logan?
Yeah, I did Minari too.
Oh, okay, got it.
I actually really dug it because like it gives you a chance to like make a night of it. Because I had my in-laws over. And it was like, hey, rate it 7, like we can, you know, hop into the stream and stuff like that.
That's what we've been, I've been doing that with like a lot of movies in general, just like finding nights to like cut the lights and, you know, I mean, most movies that I really want to watch, I turn off screens and try to just like be in it. But
yeah,
it's been fun to like when you literally invest money into these at-home movies to try to recreate a theater experience. Even though you're just like in PJs on the couch, but we've been incorporating them into like date nights and just a lot of different stuff.
Yeah. Well, there's ways you can do it. Like, for example, you can invite me over and I will like snore in the seat behind you to replicate the theater experience.
I had that with 1917 a year ago. I had a man fall asleep. Snored, woke himself up snoring. When he woke up, he immediately started smashing popcorn.
Yeah.
During 1917?
Yeah.
It's like such a film you really do. Like Nomadland or Minari, I'm like, again, it's a little slower. There's no explosions or anything like that.
I fell asleep during an Oscar contender a couple nights ago. I know we're like
an unnamed Oscar contender?
An unnamed Oscar contender. I, out of respect for the contender, I'm not. No, it's Dear Comrades. It might be the one of the international film nominees.
Oh, okay.
And it's good. It's on Hulu too, and I was liking it, but I like could not do black and white slow burn subtitles.
Is it Russian?
It's Russian, and it's like it's, you know, it is exciting. I think I will watch it again, But like,
yeah, the Russians are intense.
So are circuses.
So my favorite. Sorry, go ahead, Logan.
Sorry, I don't know what to tell. I'm hijacking this. I'm one Kona deep, and I'm going crazy. You guys take it away, Nomadland.
No. I had a thought on the movie night. Like my favorite part of the Minari movie night was I programmed about 27 minutes of previews, which was
excellent. That's hilarious.
Which was very fun, but it was about, you know, it was like really not preparing for the movie we're going to watch, because it was like we watched like Godzilla versus Kong preview and like Mortal Kombat, and it was like, oh, this is sick. That was Dune. Like, awesome. I can't wait to see Dune in a theater. And then it was like
green. So you just did all the Warner Brothers movies.
Basically. I mean, that's what I'm excited for.
That's smart. No, I saw this on Chelsea's Instagram story. I saw you playing the organ along with it too, because Music Box has an organist for their showings, and I was like, this is incredible. Like, I think that is the most I missed Music Box, and I've missed Music Box.
Yeah,
a lot.
I busted out. I had to test out about like 50 different organ sounds on GarageBand until I could really find the proper Music Box one.
That's
but then yeah, I busted out the keyboard and had some tunes. Tried to get some classic movie tunes going through our veins before Minari. The worst part of it was that, and I don't know if this might just be my internet, but we had like 10 minutes of really high quality video, and then it just cut out to like, okay. You too?
Same.
Okay.
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 The same thing.
So okay. This is, I actually like legit have told people to not do the A24 screening, because
yeah.
I was like, cause we had some people at work who were also interested in the movie, and me and Dalton and my girlfriend Amber, we were like pumped to like go in on the movie.
Yeah.
And it was really good quality. I understood they have like a watermark with your information on it, if you guys don't know this at home, that pops around the screen for like screen sharing piracy purposes, which you can kind of get over that, but like truly that mixed with the low quality eventually, like
yeah,
like 420p or what is it, be 420, I don't know, but like it was
420?
420p, dude.
oh 480p,
like that was quarter, 420p.
It felt like quarter resolution.
It was gross, dude, and yeah. It's such a pretty movie that like, but almost any, but like when like a at home YouTuber can upload like 8K footage, there's no reason for a major distributor to not be able to have a high definition.
I know,
like just high def, I would have liked, but like let alone, I was expecting 4K. Like I thought it was gonna be like,
I think it was 4K at first. It looked like 4K.
I think it was 1080, because like I put my COVID project, I put a theater room in. Like a mini one. Like we have a little projector and like the layback reclining seats and stuff like that. But I freaking like, I had my Ethernet cable in, and I have like 100 megabytes per second, and it was dropping sometimes. I'm like, this.
And I thought I was like watching like a crappy like screener rip of the movie, and I
from
A24. From A24. But I was just like, this kind of stinks, especially when there's like a precedent for like so many others.
Streaming.
Yeah, it's like that's been around for a decade, and like,
and my Nomadland experience through the, I believe it was like the virtual cinema at Lincoln Center, which is a theater in New York City, was great, and like I just think as was my Music Box at home. I watched two of the Wong Kar Wai films.
Same, I did Music Box home a couple times, and I had no issues with that at all.
Yeah, so like, I don't know.
A24 did freaking time slots too, so it's not like everyone 8 p.m. in the country could buy slots. There's a limited amount of tickets.
I think
available.
That was just like some marketing on their end to like to generate.
I thought it was
some
a bandwidth
demand.
Issue.
Some
like,
forced,
I thought there'd be zero bandwidth issue.
There
some
might be like a
demand.
Maybe like a little bit of a bandwidth issue, but I freaking doubt it. Like A24 is as indie darlings as they are. I mean, these are multiple million-dollar movies. This is not like a tiny thing.
No, A24 is good. Company. They're real small. There's like three people.
Oh,
yeah, it was like
people.
Yeah, they were doing like
multi-million-dollar.
They had to like. They had to like turn the DVD itself like for every individual screening. So
A24
pretty...
is like officially as like they have to turn the DVDs over like reels. A24 is like as mainstream as indie as you can get right now. Not saying that's a bad thing about their movie quality,
as
but it's
indie,
like,
yeah,
they're like a huge indie company right now, and like it's, I would say, and I don't even care about resolution that much, but for paying $20, like I'm gonna go on a limb, guys, damn near unacceptable quality.
I want my money back.
No, A24, you can keep it. I like those guys. I want that little kid to have the money to buy some Mountain Dew.
I know, yeah. Like, all the special features were really cool. He was so funny. Like,
the chats were cool. All the bonuses were worth it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, but anyways, so I was a little disappointed. I'm glad to hear that you guys had the same experience.
Legit, feel great to know that. I'm sad that you guys had a bad experience too, but it makes me feel way less crazy.
Yes, same here. Same here. But Nomadland is available on Hulu, so you can just go watch it.
Excellent quality.
Robbie, did you know much about this film going in? Had the Nomadland hype train reached you prior to watching it?
Oh, I told Emily, I'm like, yeah, it's about a girl in the 80s who loses her job at a plant and goes across the country. And
then first shots at Amazon warehouse.
I'm like, maybe I didn't know as much as I thought. I think I like melded like 14 movies in my mind thinking it was Nomadland. But I didn't know much going into it. Obviously.
Right. Yeah. I'm curious with a movie like this, like, what kind of reach it has. Like I wish that we did have numbers, like box office numbers or viewing numbers from like these companies, because like I just wish I knew how popular legitimately like something like Mank or Nomadland or Trial of the Chicago 7, like any of these movies straight to streamers actually are, you know.
Yeah,
Judas and the Black Messiah, like
Nomadland's gonna be a tough one. I think there's gonna be a lot of 10-minute testers being like, let's watch something else, you know.
Yeah,
so
I'd agree with that. Of those ones that you just mentioned, Mike, I think that's the only one. Nomadland has like some in or out moments where,
yeah,
like I don't think it's particularly like appalling, but like there's just, I think a lot of people have certain mindsets about people that go the path that she does in the movie that are gonna make, like, and if you watch the whole movie you kind of see the other side who might object to her career or her life path. But yeah, I would say that. But I mean, overall, I love Nomadland. I thought that was an excellent motion picture.
I don't think that, like, it almost sounds to me like you're making like a political statement of, or not that you're making a political statement, but like that people would view something that she's doing as a political statement. But like, I didn't really feel like the movie was that political, like in a good way. Like, it just showed the story, I think. But I don't know if that would be as much of a factor as, once again, just like people when you're at home and you have like, you could just watch like 10 episodes of Bridgerton or whatever.
Oh, you're like saying like a different thing, like the content people want.
Yeah, it seems like you have to be maybe, like, it seems like the type of thing that you have to be urged on by someone who's like, this is a really great film, it could win an Oscar, like, whatever, like, versus just seeing it on your Hulu front page and being like, I'll check this out. But then again, like, I don't know, Frances McDormand is something of a movie star. Like, she's an Oscar winner. I think she's pretty recognizable.
I think Nomadland, especially it releasing on a huge platform for free, is like, like, for us all who would have paid to go see it, I think multiply that by a few for the people who would have waited for home video. So I would venture to guess it's, if you, however you equate
for home this, video,
home video
for the VHS tape,
for the
Nomadland.
VHS tape from Blockbuster. But yeah. I think it's probably got a pretty solid reach. But yeah. And also, like, to clarify some of my, I didn't mean like so much politically as much as like, I think some people just get like grossed out seeing those kind of stories, like, and not like a guttural reaction, just
like
kinda,
the,
like,
pooping,
exactly, like, I don't want to see a woman living in a van for this long. It grosses me out. It upsets me.
Yeah,
I know, like, there's a lot of people, especially like in older age brackets, who are like, I just don't want to watch depressing stuff.
Yeah, but I feel like it's done in such a, like, it's done in like a relatable way almost, right? I don't know.
Preaching to the choir, man. I'm speculating on fake people.
It's not like you're watching like a Harmony Korine film and it's like really like,
yeah, that's true, it is really
people
pretty
or something like that. Like, I guess there's some people who you could maybe call trashy in it, but like, I also didn't realize until after the film was over that there were people in this movie playing themselves based on
majority,
like
most,
yeah, like Snappy or whatever her name is. Robbie just saw it. What's her name? Snarky?
Yeah, something like that.
Sparky.
But, yeah, I know. Well, you know what's funny is I went to the user reviews for Nomadland after I saw it, and like, what it's got, you know, it's, as you can imagine, it's got good reviews on Metacritic, and like,
what's the user reviews from where? Like,
user reviews from Metacritic. I should have clarified.
Okay.
And like, it's one of the bottom ones. It's like, It's like, this doesn't happen to anybody. no one gets poor. Like, if you did get poor, it's your fault. I'm just like, maybe that's what I was reacting to in my head of the person who might object to this movie. It's like your bootstrap crowd who don't get how this could happen to somebody. But that's exactly why I like this movie so much, is that, or Nomadland, is that it does seem to like shine a light on like a very real scenario for some people. Like, some people get wiped out when people die, and some people hold on to stuff until it's all gone, and then you're just stuck. Like, and it's a lot of people, but, you know, most people who make these movies and talk about these movies don't experience it. So I thought it was really, like, it was good to see that, because I just, like, I've had an uncle who's lived in a van for a little bit because he had to.
Yeah.
And he had a moment, like, at the end of the movie, the character does, where some family members try to pull him out, and he ended up moving into an apartment, but... like the one, like the dad character, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it just resonated with me, because like, we're all so close to that scenario and we don't even realize it.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting, the idea that she, like, and this could be dangerous politically, but I don't think it really stepped into this territory, but this idea that she, part of her wanted to live this lifestyle, right? But like, obviously it was less than ideal, but there was that craving she had for like being on the road and adventure, which I think like a lot of people understand. It kind of reminded me weirdly of the very final scene of The Hurt Locker, where Jeremy Renner's character is like, I want to go back to war. Like, I hate this suburban life. Take me back to Iraq, baby. Like,
well, one thing I saw Robbie, you just saw it. What are your thoughts on Nomadland? I feel like me and Mike are just
I enjoy it. I'm a listener now. No, I really like it. No, I just thought, just the shots of, you know, this country and just like the sunsets and stuff like that. And that one shot from the trailer where she's in that white dress and she's in the Badlands and she has the lantern in her hand. You're like, man, this is incredible. Like, that was one, you know, right up there with storytelling. I think visually that's just one of the strongest points of the film. And we're all from like more East Coast, you know, Midwest, where like that lands super foreign to me. Like, I've only, you know,
The Great Southwest.
Yeah, exactly. It was just, I just thought it was gorgeous. And then her story's cool. Like, I thought immediately just clicking with the Amazon story and of her going there and, you know, doing that temp job. I didn't realize that was real. That's a real thing.
Yeah, the seasonal workers. Yeah.
Yeah. And they'll pay for your freaking van parking and stuff like that. I'm big fan.
It's
really
weird, man. Like, I can't talk like a lot about the politics of Amazon, but like, there are certain things like that where it's like, are they doing things to help people? And like, they're really pushing for like the minimum wage right now, but like, also we know like that Amazon has caused a lot of harm. So it's just like, it's interesting that it's even in this film, but it still feels apolitical to me. Like, I don't know. Like, it and it's weird too, like, you have Amazon, who owns this other streaming company, vying for Oscars, and then it's like Hulu, who's just a similar type company in that regard, who's like paying for this movie. I don't know. It's just like, it's weird seeing the intersection of all those things.
Well, it was also a phrase that she uses in the movie is like, "Oh, don't, no worries, I'm doing Amazon. I'll get you the money back. Like, I'm gonna go do some Amazon, and I'll get you your money." It's just like a weird statement, and it's a good showing just like the different relationships we have with this huge monolithic company and how it's like, you know, it's good and bad. I mean, it's definitely not neutral. It just depends on what sector you're in. I mean, if it provides people some livelihoods, it's hard to knock, but if it's destroying other people's, if the wake of its economic destruction has led it to this, then it's kind of hard to have
I don't show the bad parts of Amazon, like peeing in bottles because you have to meet quotas of scanning items.
But it also didn't look like it didn't look particularly awesome. I think it just showed that, that's what I had a friend who used to manage a Amazon plant. Like, this is the shit you did. Like, he was the guy that led the warm-ups in the morning. Like, that one character.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, that's a real job. I mean, like, you just manage people who come and go, and you know.
That reminded me of American Factory, like the chants and stuff that they would, like, they tried to bring back to America. Like, all right, guys, we're going to do a quick warm-up here.
They're like, oh, we don't want to do that.
Yeah, we're Americans. We don't do that. Robbie, I think that's a really good point. Like, sometimes, for me, it's like, sometimes it's underrated how good a movie is just based on, like, how much they shoot at golden hour in pretty vistas across the United States. Like that, like those are like so many bonus points for me right there already. I'm like, I don't know, like what's that, there's like pretty the, music and there's like a car driving through
that,
like,
piano. And then like it, when they're in, I don't know if they were in Washington State or Oregon in the last like final part of the film. And she's like on the, you know, like the wind is sweeping in and she's on that like, you know, cliff edge near the ocean. Yeah. And like you have the piano going in the background. Like, this is great. I mean, really, you can't beat stuff like that. I was thinking of some of your footage you showed me from some of your trips, Mike. It's just like, that's just so ethereal and nice to look at.
Thank you, Robbie. I'm on Nomad.
You directed
level.
Nomad.
Yeah, you're directing the Marvel's The Eternals next, right, Mike?
I just looked that up. Yes. Yeah, she's the director.
They took her off the project. They said, "We're not letting you direct this trashy movie. You got to go do something else pretty again." But no, I'm just kidding. I don't know how The Eternals will be. Maybe it will be as lyrical and poetic as Nomadland.
Okay, I will say I saw it was like an ad on Facebook from a Fandango, or I don't know how this shit works anymore, but just the headline was her. Is it? It's Chloe Zhao, right?
Yeah.
It's the director of Nomadland.
Zhao.
Yeah. So Chloe Zhao, it says, director Chloe Zhao states, "The Eternals will be as sweeping and beautiful as Nomad." It was like, it'll have the same feel as Nomadland. And I was like, no, it fucking won't. Like, 1,000,000%. Like, maybe there's one
handheld. Except, like, Angelina Jolie just, like, looking out at the galaxy, like, for like, a 2-minute shot.
Yeah, yeah. We actually had Angelina talk with real aliens, and we just let it roll. Like, it like, that real feeling, is it's there because it is real. Yeah. But like, I'm just like, no,
I just want like Reddit to pick that up. Be like, wow, guys, like, hey, we're in the Marvel Studios spoilers subreddit right now, and the director said it's gonna be just like Nomadland.
It's like, it's okay to like just get like they. I mean, if she's
go
there
make
for
your money, Chloe, you know,
yeah, if she's there for like tone and like she's a great like person at the helm to make sure the movie's moving along great. That's what a huge studio director does. In my opinion, like, I think you could do cool stuff and you could put your stamp on shit, but you can't tell me that Thor Ragnarok looks like any of other Taika Waititi's movies.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I was actually about to bring up that movie.
Like, he put a character in there. Yeah.
I know that, like, that is a movie cited as, like, look, directors can have imprints on these franchises, but, like, the vast majority of these movies you look at and it's like, no, it's like, there's no real like directorial imprint, in my opinion.
I've heard that Chloe Zhao is also gonna do. She's gonna play Korg in Eternals. The director always has to play Korg.
Hey mate,
we're
going to Earth, aren't we?
Piss off, Ghost.
Well, that's great. I'm glad
Is this the Nomadland pod? I think this is just the Nomadland episode.
No, I think we should.
We need some clickbait, so you need to put Nomadland in another film? Question mark. I think like keep the viewers
and an
listening.
Equally relevant and exciting film called Joint Security Area. Oh, I thought you guys were gonna say it. With
I was
me.
Trying to. Should we try again?
All right.
Yeah.
A great, exciting, relevant film called
Joint Security. Area.
Nomadland.
Okay. Nomadland 2.
That was a test to see how in sync our computers are.
Well, that's so Mike can sync up the audio later.
Yeah, exactly. It was like a clapper. So how this came about, how this group of people was organized is that Robbie...
This joint group of people.
Robbie was supposed to watch a movie that I recommended, and I was excited about it. I was like, oh, Robbie's going to watch The Vanishing. This is great. I think he's really gonna like it. And then like minutes before he starts, he's like, actually Logan recommended this movie that I'm gonna watch. So
okay.
I'm gonna watch Logan's movie instead.
To my benefit, it was like Vanishing is a disturbing horror movie. We were looking for something a little more like what Logan was recommending.
Right, like something more like Logan would like.
Oh, but Logan said something else.
So after swooping my login credentials, Robbie then, he just pretended like he was going to watch my movie, and then he said, actually, my good friend Logan Lukacs recommended a film, and that movie was Joint Security Area. So Robbie and Emily watched that movie, and then the next day, Robbie was like, oh, it's really good, you should watch it. And then so I was watching it, and like in the middle of watching it, I texted Logan, because I was like, stewing in my head, like, I gotta get more pod episodes out. So I was like, Logan, we should, I know you wanted to do like some Wes Anderson movies, like, or whatever, like, we should do a pod episode. And he's like, oh, I have a movie in mind, it's called Joint Security Area. And I was like, oh, I'm literally watching that movie right now. So, but that was a couple weeks ago, and I actually only watched about half of it, and I was just like, I was a little bored, to be honest. And upon actually watching the full movie the other day, I realized that part of the reason I was bored is because I was just like on my phone and didn't know what anyone was saying. So
yep,
I really
that'll
paid,
do it. That'll
I really
do it
paid
on
attention
one of these,
this time.
These Korean movies. If yes. you don't know what anyone's saying, you're going to get lost.
It's true. So I was.
The 1-inch bar of text separates so many people from so many amazing films.
It's true.
Oh, wait. Somebody,
Bong Joon-ho.
I'm sorry, this is a quick, that just to your joke, Robbie, somebody told me the other day that they had a coworker who just found out about closed captioning. They're like, hey, I want to recommend a movie to you. It's kind of weird because it's in a different language. But the cool thing is that there
but they
is
got this technology.
No, like the person that pitched it, like, there's this thing called closed captioning that like you can watch any movie now.
You don't have to just imagine what they're saying.
Or, like know the language.
You can actually have it translated for you in real time.
Like, with what they're saying.
Accurately.
But you're bored. You listened to the movie. You watched it. You liked it.
First, I listened to the movie and didn't watch it.
You're
and
like,
then
ugh,
next,
I'm really
I watched
not
the film
it.
Without audio. And then I just sliced them together in my head. I really liked it when I did actually sit down and watch it. So I was finishing it up, and I was like, all right, guys, when are we doing this? We got to do this. Joint Security Area. My first question, Robbie, is that if you were on the Korean Peninsula at the end of the Korean War, which side would you have gone to?
Yeah.
I would be one of the 53 people that didn't pick a side, I think. I think
some
be,
people couldn't answer. Pick a side.
No, I would definitely be North Korean.
Jesus Christ.
I think I've always thought it's really interesting about South Korea, how they are, like, the situation of the fact that they were split and that they're the ones that are not, not connected to the mainland. You know what I mean? So it's like the whole border, as far as I know, there's no trains that go out of South Korea into China. Once again, I don't know a lot about this, so...
I think you're right.
I'm going on Google Maps right
because
now.
Because it's contentious, you know, the relationship is extremely contentious. So, like, if you wanted to go to Beijing from Seoul, you'd have to fly, presumably, or take a boat of some sort. But I just think it's really interesting. Like, think about America and just, like, yeah, you can cross the border into Canada, you can cross the border into Mexico. You don't feel trapped, necessarily, like... living in Illinois, that's like there's tons of land to my east, tons of land to the west. And
lands on the east, lands on the west.
A little bit to the north and a whole lot to the south.
Whole lot to the south, man. Welcome to Illinois. Here's your passport.
But I don't know. Don't you guys think it would be interesting, like as a South Korean, like feeling surrounded by water and then to the north, just like a hostile enemy? Like, wouldn't you feel a little trapped? I don't know.
I think so. I mean, I think that's why a lot of, I think, Korean culture, at least what we get and what we get to perceive of it, has, like, mirrored some American culture in certain ways. Like, they have, like, a very similar pop culture that we, to us, mm-hmm. have, like, a movie-going country. They have a very music-focused country. They're, like, one of their chief exports is entertainment. Like, they've become somewhat insular in that. And, like, I think sometimes movies like this offer...
K-pop.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't want to boil it down to just those basic things. But, like, I think that is why, like, they've enriched themselves so much and, like, have gotten super focused on their own celebrity is that, yeah. like, they don't have, like, as much of a connection. They were allowed to grow kind of on their own and with other influences beyond, like, the 60s. And I guess, like... prior to all this, like, you know, when there was unity, they did have rail systems, and now they just have planes, and they're like, I guess we're doing fine with planes. Like, did not have, like, those major access points to the mainland. Yeah, I guess I never even thought about that. It'd be pretty, like, a weird ramification of war we wouldn't even think of. Or at least I wouldn't have. I'm sure the people going to war would think of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Logan, how did you come across this film? Because I hadn't heard of it.
Yeah, so I and my girlfriend have been doing these full-on director retrospectives. We did Taika Waititi, and then we did Wes Anderson. So we just, like, watched through all their movies, and we, like, pre-rank them based on ones we'd seen before, like, what we think we like the best, and then afterwards we'll, like, rank them again. And it's a very, like, really fun, enriching way to, like, watch. It's like doing, like, a book club but with a director. And, like, it makes us – I think it made us think about the movies a little bit more and, like, talk about them. And then so I pitched because she really liked Parasite. I was like, well, if you like Parasite, you might like some other South Korean movies. And I really like Park Chan-wook because I was an edgy teenager who really liked Old Boy. Like, that was one of my favorite movies. Still is. I love Old Boy. And then I had watched –
did you watch that back in the early Netflix days?
Mm-hmm. I watched the DVD. I didn't get the DVD, but it was streaming on there. But right. I watched Old Boy. He has the trilogy called the Vengeance Trilogy. And then I watched, he has like a vampire movie called Third. I've seen literally every single one of these guys, this guy's movies, Park Chan-wook, the directors, besides Joint Security Area.
Okay.
And it's technically his first movie, although he has some shorts before it, and he has one movie that he has disavowed. That you literally can't get it anywhere. Like, he's made, I don't know if he's made sure of it. I just think it was a tiny movie. So to start off the movie rewatch, I was like, well, let's just do it in order. And there we hit Joint Security Area, because I just thought, I knew it wasn't a stinker, but I just remember when I was like getting into movies and I was rewatching all this guy's stuff, it looked like the least interesting one to me. As a 20-year-old. But like now it almost looks like one of the most interesting ones to me, because it's about such a fascinating topic of like the DMZ and just the Joint Security Area in general. I just like didn't have a, I was like, this looks like a dumb war drama. But upon watching it, like, it's got like some 2000s tropes to it, but I don't know, man, like it's like a really highly recommendable movie to me. Like,
it holds up so well.
Like, I think it's like super entertaining and like so charming, and like I was pretty blown away by it, because it's not really like any of his other movies. Like none of his other movies really have this kind of quality to it, where I was like, this is kind of like this guy could direct like a Mission Impossible after this. Like, I think this guy, like, he has like some cool shit going on.
Yeah, I felt like the beginning was a little slow, and in terms of the setup of the investigator coming in, and it felt like I was watching almost like an episode of like CSI or something, to be honest with you. And also I felt like the two like the Swedish and the Swiss actors, those characters were just like really bad actors, I felt like.
Yeah, that was so funny. But like, I think that added to the movie, but continue.
Yeah, so that was like that's kind of the setup. But I do think that as soon as the movie gets into like first there are like the reenactments from both sides and both of their stories that they're telling, which has like a little Rashomon flair to it, in terms of like we're seeing some different stories play out, which I thought was going to be the whole movie. But then once we get into the extended flashback of actually seeing their story and seeing what happened, I was like really gripped and bought in terms of just like it stayed with it. It didn't like, I liked that it didn't keep jumping back to the investigator and those people. Like, it just let you stay with that flashback story and let you see these relationships develop in this kind of complex way, right? Like, these people can't trust each other at first, but they are really bored and lonely and they start becoming friends. And I liked seeing that sort of like montage play out of them, like slowly getting closer and whatnot. And then like, you know, throwing the messages across the bridge and then like eventually showing up into the North Korean post, I thought was
the North Korean clubhouse.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the clubhouse.
It was just echoing that, just that, yeah, the storytelling, like the way it's set up, it starts off a little slow, and then you cut to the South Korean's guy life, and then you get a glimpse into how, you know, these North Koreans people, how they're, you know, treated and where they're stationed at, and then you kind of get the pivotal, you know, some pivotal scenes like their first big encounter and him in the, you know, North Korean guy is doing something redeemable, like saving him from a landmine. And I just destroyed the way it bounced back and forth. It was really easy to follow along, actually, but it was really gripping because each story, each little tidbit you got, you just kind of wanted more.
Mm-hmm. I think there's also just a general fascination with the Korean Peninsula and the DMZ in particular. Yeah. And those blue buildings are pretty iconic, I think. I'm curious, like, this movie was a big hit in South Korea. I don't know how well it was seen or received in like, the United States. But, like, I do wonder
I thought you were going to say, I wonder how well it was in North Korea.
Yeah, I wonder how much how did the North feel about this one?
Well, they didn't, like, they don't get a ton into the politics in terms of the actual political differences, right? Like, they don't necessarily take a side in this film. It's a humanistic film in the sense that it portrays all of these people as just, you know, they talk about them being brothers from the same heritage and everything, and that, like, there's these just political differences that set them up as enemies. But it doesn't really get in, other than, like, what people say, where you have the South Korean general talking about how, like, there's only two types of people in the world, like, commies and people who shoot commies or something like that, right? He says something along those lines. And then the North Korean soldier who mans the post, played by Song Kang-ho, who the dad from Parasite, he's pretty recognizable at this point. He when it comes down to it, and they kind of like talking about like, hey, why don't you ever come down to the South? Like, don't you want to see what it's like? He, like, gets really defensive, and he talks about, like, his, like, devotion to the motherland or to his country or whatever, you know? So, but short of that, it doesn't, like, get a lot into, like, this is who is right and this is who is wrong. Obviously, it's a South Korean film. They're all South Korean actors. Like, it's not like they got people from North Korea. We know how shut off that country is. So,
but I think to that point though, it really helped. It helped make you not. It helped get kind of your American lens off of stuff for a second, because we tend to like go like North Korea bad, weird, like dumb caricature based on just what we get fed about it, and whether or not that's fair or not is one thing, but those are all people. It's all individual human beings.
Think that's fair about the government.
Yeah, about the government, but like the human beings there who are kind of entrapped or just living and don't even know anything different, like they're still people. Like we still advocate for humans as in general, right? Like we should look out for our fellow person. And these are people who, for all they know, are doing the most noble mission they could ever do. And that's protect their land and their people and their fellow human as well. And in an ideal world, they would indoctrinate everybody in the South to be like them and vice versa, you know? And so to have these two characters that are not condemned, I think maybe their thought patterns are somewhat condemned because it's so like the North does not fuck around in this movie and the South kind of fucks around a little bit more. And like I would say that the North is more threatening to me than the South is in this movie, just from the lens in which it's shot. But I would agree with you that like neither side is really condemned or advocated for. It's just really boiled down to two groups of people who wish they could just be buddies. Like that whole sequence where they're just being pals is so cute.
I mean, you say that about like the power or like the defensiveness of North Korea in this movie, and I mean that's, you know, in part that the country is built on a, you know, house of cards in the sense.
Totally.
They don't have that economic prosperity of South Korea, and they on a global scale they are not like, they don't have a ton of allies, and they're seen as like horrible when it comes to humanitarian issues. So like you do have all that when you're a dictator and you are holding up this system, like you are going to be defensive about that and have to hold your people there, right? Like they don't want, like there's the, I think it's an interesting exchange, like with the I think this moment that I'm talking about happens when they're eating the like chocolate moon pies or whatever, which is like this amazing treat that the South Koreans have that like they don't have in North Korea. And the character Soo Hyuk from South Korea, he's like the main character that we kind of focus on. He's he's just like, hey, why don't you ever, and he's almost testing him too, because like his partner who starts to get in on it with their little gang of four, like he suggests like, hey, do you think they're playing us? Do you think they're like, do you think they're just trying to get us to defect to the north? And so he almost kind of like tests him, the Okyung Pil, the dad from Parasite again. He almost kind of like tests him. He's just like, hey, why don't you ever come down to the south? Like, would you want to come down? Like, you can eat as many of these as you want or whatever. And he gets really tense in it. And he's just like, no, I could never go down there.
Yeah.
And you see that it's not necessarily like equal footing in terms of their priorities.
Yeah, the give and take or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I also, did you guys get a sense of any like homoerotic tension in this movie?
I got the sense of deprivation in the movie. Like I think there was a lack of intimacy in all four of them that having new people around fulfilled. I just think that there was like a lot of like super strong camaraderie that was born out of like the two guys from the north saving the initial south guys like life.
Yeah.
I think he felt a lot of gratitude. I think he felt like a lot of love for them for kind of sparing him essentially. And I think with that, you always kind of have to like flip the coin as to whether or not they're trying to make a statement about like male just friendships or relationships or whatever that means. But I don't know if I felt like a ton of tension. I just felt like there was like a lot of like more like fraternal bonds going on.
Yeah. Like going off of that, like I can see that the South Korean, you know, they're lonely people. I really think they were, but the North Koreans, I just think they never had a childhood. They never had a boyhood. They never had sleepovers, and they had never had
sleepover vibes, man.
Yeah, exactly. That's like a huge part of it. And you know, they're getting that adolescent. You know,
like they're like wrestling around and like
exactly
drunk and like
they should have had that at 13, but they're having it, you know, 40. You know, with the one older North Korean main character. And it's so cool to watch that delayed adolescence kind of, they're coming out like in, you know, things that should happen years ago. I thought that was really
I just remember one sequence in the middle there where they were starting to get really like you're saying, the wrestling, and they're kind of like lingering, like holding each other or whatever. And then we cut to the scene where they're standing across each other on the demarcation line. And then we kind of get this close up of like the spit going. The spit going on his foot, and I was like, ooh. Like,
you know, okay. Well,
felt vaguely pornographic to me.
So now that you're bringing that point up, I would say, I think you get full points if you're writing a paper about this.
Is my mind just ruined this much, or is it?
No, because I mean, I don't know. I don't even know what I'm not trying to like debunk or defend or do any part of that with this, but like, yeah, I agree. I think that's a reading of this. Like, I think you can totally see this as like, you know, totally romantic.
Yeah.
Think about maybe one of the best analogs you can to a story like this of Romeo and Juliet. It's like love and passion. Like they're passionately involved with each other. Whatever that means for these two characters, they are literally risking what they know is certain death. Like none of those characters don't know how serious it is when they get caught. Mm-hmm. Like they're never like, what were we doing? Like they know it's like the one guy tries to fucking blow his brains out immediately once he's about to get caught. Like they know how deep what they're getting into.
Oh, in the interrogation, his friend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so like, I think like to risk that and to develop this love to where they're like celebrating birthdays and like, they're just like, there's one thing to like have a head nod with the enemy or like give a guy a smoke, but there's like another thing to like go over and like sleep over every night, like hang out and fucking pal around. Like
did also remind me of Parasite too, when like that, when the family starts like spending more time in the house, or like specifically the night in Parasite when the family's like all over at the house.
Oh, kind of like spurs like, into the final
in a place
part.
They're like so careless in a place that they shouldn't be, and just like really letting their guard down. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think there's like a really effective part of the movie was that that whole middle section, I think, is like really the best part of the movie sandwich there, where it's like,
oh, yeah.
You really do feel like why this would be such a relief, and like you do want to see these characters have fun and like just chill out. they're so tense all the time. It's so tense. It's so stiff for a while to see somebody like starting to laugh. I even remember when I watched it with Amber, she even let out like a big like, aw, like the first time that they all hung out. Because at that point in the movie, you're so ready for some palling around, and it's so unexpected.
I know. We needed like some jitterbug, like montage music, like for their sleepover.
But then again, once that one guy shows up and like the bottom drops out on everything, like the other North Korean guy shows up, you as a viewer also know how serious it is. Like, you're not taken by surprise either. Like, you can only imagine how tense these guys were the whole time they were hanging out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like every time they, you know, cross the border to go to North Korea, and the, like, bottom of my stomach, I'm like, that could be the last, you know, this could be the beginning of the end here of this. Like, this is obviously very finite. Like, they're both talking about, like, I think one of the cool parts of it was talking about the military life in terms of the guy's like, oh, yeah, we have to join the South Korean army for 2 years or something like that. And the other guy's like really old and has fought abroad and in Africa or something like that.
Yep.
And then he's has like a lowly guard duty or something like that, that he wasn't even feeling very much. But and they're just like, the North Korean guys cannot wrap their heads around. Like, oh, you only have to like be in the army for 2 to 3 years, and you're out in like 3 months.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. There's those different points of pride that you can take on either side of an issue like that. You know what I mean? Like, you could have that with somebody in America who served versus somebody like me, and just like having like I've had fun and done this and that and traveled or whatever, and it's just like, oh yeah, but you haven't like served your country, or like you haven't like. You haven't had those like bonds of brotherhood or whatever it is. You know what I mean? Like, you could easily have that conversation and that thing of like, yeah, you're right. Or, but like, I'm also glad I didn't, you know, like those two things, there's like, no matter what your experience is, like you can find a way to defend it. And you see that with these two sides, in this as well. I thought it was interesting, the whole scene where you have the American, it's not just American tourists, but like mostly American tourists come through, and they're inside the blue buildings, and they're like, they're out there and like getting led a tour, right by the demarcation line. And for me, it was like a cool illustration of the fact that like, obviously there's this really bloody history between the two Koreas on the Korean Peninsula, this war and this like really, tense truce that they have essentially living with each other, but also it's like peaceful enough at the moment that it is kind of a show. Like, it's something about it is performative. Like, you wouldn't have tourists coming through there if it was like actually war zone dangerous, you know what I mean? Like, it's been like proven to be safe enough to have these like daily tours come through or whatever. But there's also a real tension. And I got that like through the, relationship between all the characters, and the fact that like the fact that they just like, they end up crossing over, like you said, they know there's a danger, but they end up just like crossing over pretty easily. And they're just like, whatever, why not? Like, this is worth it. This is better to have friends and like, also just like exchange experiences, right? Like, think about like when you kind of meet someone from a different part of the world or the country, and you just like feel a kinship in the sense of like, what's your story? This is interesting. And it's like, for all of the characters, they're intrigued by learning about the inner lives of these people that are, you know, typically vilified by their government and by their military. So, you know, crossing borders, making connections, all of that.
You know, in middle school, we had a day called Mix It Up at Lunch Day, where you had to sit with people you didn't normally sit with. You got like put in a color group, and you had to go sit with them.
Yes.
And I think that's a lot like this movie. Because I don't remember anything about Mix It Up at Lunch Day or this movie. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, it's also funny too, like the idea like of being at, like, I even remember being in college and being like, oh, like I need to go like hang out with that group of people because they're so different. Like, they're so like, And then you take a step back and you're like, no, they're not different at all. Like, we're all like from the Midwest, like mostly white people at this college who have like had similar backgrounds. Like, it was just like a funny thing to think about. Like, when you think like, I'm different than that person, and you're like, no, not really. Like, this Man. Isn't.
It always this came down to, how many people were you in your graduating class? Dude, that's nuts.
Yeah, I know, right?
That's crazy. I had less than that.
How big of a high school, yeah.
I had more than that. Okay, right. Cool.
It was really weird for me growing up because I went to like a pretty small high school. And then, oh, wait, how small was your high school? Was it like 70 people? Like...
Yeah, cool. Do you guys want to eat chicken tenders every day with me?
Wow, we've really bridged the gap here, guys.
Wow, I just love the diversity of this school. But I honestly, like, I thought the movie, like, there's like certain shots of it that I just thought like just looked cool. Like, they were like cool for the sake of being cool. Like when he jumped...
That 70s show Swivels.
Yeah, yeah,
them hanging out.
Yeah, that was tight. And then like him when he jumped out the window and it went like slow mo. Yeah, there's like a lot of. And just
Zack Snyder,
mm-hmm. And just from seeing this guy's other movies, like, you can tell that he's sort of playing house with some different directing styles, because I think there was some things that were pretty in vogue at the time when it comes to just like The Matrix and Crouching Tiger, like all that stuff was on the come up at that time, like slow mo, sleek stuff, even like the military font showing up on screen with like the. Kind
that
of stuff
James
like
Bond.
I was always like this looks like some weird Mission Impossible 2 shit. And
yeah, I love the opening with the owl, and then it like the gunshot rings out and it flies away, and then you get the opening title. It's so funny.
Yeah, and I kind of like
definitely
that.
Felt like a cold opening for like The Americans or something like that, mm-hmm. Like an FX show.
And yeah. I like that juxtaposed to these like really kind of like long drawn out slow scenes where we're just kind of getting to live with these characters for a little bit. Like the scene where he gets caught by that landmine trip, you know, that wire, and
when they first meet, basically.
Yeah, when they first meet, I know I talked about it earlier, but like that's a kind of like a slow scene, like it's like really quiet for the first time, you're kind of starting to realize who the character is, you're starting to kind of understand that he's just patrolling and that this is some real danger, which kind of foreshadows the rest of the movie, like he's like on a thin line the whole time and these two guys bail him out kind of not even super benevolently, they just kind of do it because they can. They're just like, yeah, okay, and then it's the spawning of the relationship. But it almost thematically, if I were writing a paper about this, like that tripwire never went away. The tripwire was still always on that guy's foot.
You're not writing a paper. You're on a podcast, Logan.
Oh fuck!
We have to shake you out of film school.
Throughout the movie, there's a dog that the North Koreans have, and he's. He's shown a lot, and
what do you think that represents?
It it comes to fruition in like the one line when you know the North Korean, he's very dopey and stuff like that, and he has his dog that always follows him around, and like the one of like the higher ups come and like checks on the post, and he's like, why do you have a dog? He's like, take it to a butcher already and stuff like that, and you get like you just get pulled back a little bit because it really comes off a scene. Right when they were having fun with the South Koreans, playing party, playing cards, reloading guns real fast and stuff like that, where he's like, oh shit, like, yeah, North Korea's terrible. Like, they, like, literally someone just asked to take his dog he really likes to the butcher, and he makes the dog run to South Korea to live.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It pulls you back super.
I retract some of my statement about them not condemning either side that much.
Yeah, but there's also like once again at the very beginning with the South Korean general who's talking to the main character before the interrogator comes in, and you can see that he has the same sort of like
the disdain,
myopic like military you know viewpoint of what they're doing.
They're
like,
the enemies. They're nameless gray faces. Kill them all. It's a Browns reference.
Yeah, little Browns in there. Yeah, so no, this is great. I enjoyed watching this. I think that this was it took me a minute to get into it, but I still can't think of like a Korean movie that I haven't
liked.
I was
like, literally going to say the same thing. Like
never
I watched
known
somebody...
a Korean movie that I didn't like.
Although Korean, I do need to
Korean flicks are sick.
I did like back in that Netflix time that we were talking about, I think I tried to watch Old Boy and was like not into it.
Well, I would say I after Joint Security Area, I think the next week we watched Mr. Vengeance, which is also on Criterion Collection, and it is not. It's got some similar DNA, but he starts to get more into his own style, and I would say
more action packed.
It's action packed, but it's also he goes a lot more bleak. Like there's not those like fun, cute moments of like buddies palling around anymore. Like
right.
It's like because Old Boy as an introduction is really good. It's just like a good movie, and everybody talks about it all the time. And it's got like some crazy twists in it that just make it very entertaining. But at its core, it's super bleak and depressing. It's like the like you know that like the last scene in one of the last scenes in JSA where like. They kind of reservoir dog style pull guns on each other and like the quick shootout happens like and you're just like so bummed because you're like ah this is it I mean this is when we knew this was probably gonna come and here we are
you know that people have died already and everything
like. Yeah and that persists in all of his other movies it's very constant like that those dreadful moments where you're like ugh, something bad's about to happen huh Mr. Vengeance is full of that like to the point where I was like nauseated occasionally by like how bleak it got
and the other thing this like I think generally wrong I'm giving this film a glowing review like I think it's phenomenal and I think it's really timeless I think this is a movie it's 20 years later we can watch it super easily and just slide right into it
Right, like the political situation there hasn't changed much.
Right. Which is cool. And I don't think it's going to change in the next 10 years either. I think it's just, and it's going to be a time capsule for these moments. But bring it back to the whole entire overall film and like the plot. Like, you know, we agreed that we really loved how it went back and forth. And the storytelling was nonlinear. It started in media res. I really appreciate that. And then it does make you looking for the shouts. Oh, man. I took a film class.
Point out, man. He did a good job with that term.
But Pulp
Fiction.
But talk about subplots that you just do not care about at all. But you needed there just for the consistency of the movie. Because, like the main girl who's from Korea but grew up in Sweden, so she speaks perfect English, but she spent some time in Korea. And then there's like right at the end of the like near the end of the movie, there's a big reveal shocker about her father. It's just like so forgettable. And like maybe it didn't like we're not Korean or something like that. We're not. I don't think we're Korean.
Just to clarify, we're not.
Yeah, this is an audio podcast. But it was just interesting, like, that just didn't hit for me at all. And I'm like, okay, I'm ready to go back to the people I like. And so, you know,
I agree that in general, everything with the, like, I liked the interrogator, the investigator to an extent, the woman.
Right.
The two blonde dudes I thought were bad actors and they didn't, like, serve a ton of purpose. But
like, that guy who's, like, chopping the pipe. Let me tell you a little story about the It sounded like a Metal Gear Solid cutscene. I know Robbie's going to get that. But, like, it's exactly really? What it was like.
Why wouldn't I get that? What do you...
Sorry, do you watch... Fine. I'm sorry. I'm taking it back.
The video games?
Do you watch the video games, bro? But I would agree with that, Mike. I think, like, part of the... to an earlier statement I made about how I thought it enhanced the movie, like, there's pieces of that I think are really palatable. Like, cheesy... like set up exposition dumpy type characters who like really help the audience like understand what's going on because they have to talk in English to people going like, so we're going to interrogate these people about the things that just happened. Here are some of the things that just happened. It's like, yes, these things have been happening for years here. And like, you just have to go like, okay, cool. But like, you know, to the keen observer, maybe this would be a more artful movie told linearly, you know, just as a short film. Like it could have probably
been...
I think it works too, but I'm just saying like I think like the sequence of I'm of the opinion like that most of these movies that can be shown so like visually like without even any dialogue like
you don't need that expositional dialogue.
Like you could have this movie and like have a really impactful like 10 minutes almost of like character from this side meets character from this side. They're not supposed to be together. They start hanging out. It gets too deep, bottom falls
like
out.
I even prefer the, and I did this movie do this? I forget, but I even prefer the title card that, or like the, the like plot card that just like the movie starts and it just like tells you what's happening. And so just you read it, it tells you what's happening, and then
the Star Wars
you don't need,
scroll.
You don't need like a character. Yeah, the Star Wars scroll, but like there's other examples of this, but like you don't need a character to say all that to you, and then you can just go right into it, right?
I think, so like, I think most movies would benefit from a black screen that says, and then this character did this, and they don't even have to show it. Then they get to the exciting stuff.
Yeah, like, why don't we bring silent film cards back? I don't want to hear anyone talk.
I'm sick of talking, man. Honestly, this is too hot of a take, like, and I don't really believe this, but, like, sometimes, yeah. Like, I think there's so like a lot of, like, really little care put into dialogue sometimes to where it's either too much of an exposition dump or it just so doesn't matter. You could just have music playing over it and just prettier shots like you guys were talking about with Nomadland and Golden Hour, and I would get it.
Yeah.
Like I would say even Nomadland really succeeded in, like, really not telling you a ton about what was going on. You just got to see it, and it's like,
yeah, but it does, this movie does a good job of that once we get to the main characters.
Yeah, like, you're right, mate.
They don't say everything that's on their minds, but I did really like the setup of the investigator, these characters that we don't know or trust. We see their stories, and I like the, like, playing them back in this sort of like it's a, sort of like heightened music and cheesy action style of like each of their own tellings of what's happening. And then once we start getting to the real thing, it's just like, oh yeah, there's more than meets the eye here. And I like that idea of, like, you know, in real life, like, how often do you actually get the real story of what's happening behind the scenes? Like, not very often. Like, you probably, when you have two different sides telling a story, they're probably both lying to some degree. So I think it is a cool way to, like, to tell the story and to set that up, especially when you're looking at this political situation where we know that there's tons of propaganda on both sides and, you know, whatever. So
I'm actually,
sorry, I did not just mean to both sides, the Korean conflict, but so I take that back about the both sides, but you know what I mean? Just the telling and the patriotism and everything.
Well,
so,
you take it back. I'm going to double down on it.
I'm actually in Premiere right now. I'm re-editing the film with title cards.
Oh, wow.
It's
going to
be good.
The Robbie cut is actually live right now.
Link that in the pod. I did
release
the
Robbie cut.
I did ask these two when we were scheduling the recording of this to pick a side in the Korean conflict, and Logan was very eager to choose the North. So
yep.
Just want to put that out there.
Well, you know, beautiful leader has a lot of good plans that you guys just misrepresent. Okay. I was hoping it was going to be like a Korean stoner flick for joint security area. Because like
you're saying it wasn't for you, because I mean I was already lit up at that point.
Hell yeah, buddy!
I watched it in 420p.
Call back. But have you guys ever listened? I think it's a This American Life about the filmmakers who were who's the current leader of North Korea? Is it Un or Il?
Kim Jong
Un. So I think Kim Jong Il was a huge fan of cinema from across the country, and he was like always super confused why his movie sucked. And so he he kidnapped filmmakers and forced them to make movies, and a way that they like got little escapes from their life was by going out and like, cause he would pay for them to like shoot in Europe, and like they would write movies intentionally outside of Korea so that they, and he like fully trusted him. Like that was like one of the few things he had total trust and security in, was like their culture and like stuff, like the film that they could make. And then they just kind of used it to help plot their escape. Just a little plug for that pod. But I just think it's interesting.
Yeah, I think I actually started reading the book that the podcast was based on, and I didn't make it very far. It didn't grab me enough. So.
but that's just
a me problem.
But maybe cool. Audio form for 45 minutes would. But it is really
fascinating. Yeah, I listened to the podcast. It's really
great. Perfect.
Yeah.
Oh, that must have been what they were plugging then on the pod, but made me think about just like misunderstandings in North Korea and stuff like that. Because even part of them were like, you know, enamored by how much love and affection that they got from North Korea to like make movies and like how much like respect that they got, but then how terrible it was at the same time.
Yeah. I was on a podcast with Rod when we watched It's a Wonderful Life, and I made maybe an ill-advised comparison of Frank Capra to like a Leni Riefenstahl and like a propaganda master of World War II for America, because he made those types of films. And it's kind of the same thing, but yeah, it's interesting to see those that fascination with filmmaking and stardom, and like obviously ties into like so many political leaders' ambitions and like why they're even in office in the first place.
Well, that
was a big part of that. Like, those films exist and they're crazy, you know what I mean? So
it makes me laugh, because it's like for being like a dictator and, you know, widely perceived as like an awful leader, you know, to have this propaganda machine internally going like, we're awesome, like we're sweet, we got everything everybody else has got, like don't even worry, don't trip, dog, like we're sweet. But our movies do suck. Like, I don't know why our movies suck.
Like,
so
an
bad.
Honesty about that. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I was like, I wonder what we should do about
IMDb
that.
IMDb is not really about us.
We should probably kidnap good people.
It's like, why do we have no films on Netflix? This is an atrocity.
It just seems like a Star Trek plot where it's like, this country has been formed entirely on motion pictures.
Dude, that sounds like an Argo type flick they need to make now.
Dude, we make Argo again.
The reverse Argo?
What's a reverse Argo? Reverse Argo is like a movie made in earnest to save no
reverse
one.
Argo is you kidnap a director to bring to their...
Reverse Argo. Yeah, we're just making a movie to help.
Reverse
no
Argo is... Yeah.
Any other movie?
No Oscar ambitions. Just...
That's good.
Great. All right. Well, I'm glad that we could have our two North Korea experts on this podcast. I am always appreciative of the movie recommendations, Logan. So glad to have you back, both back on, and we will talk to you soon.
Thank you for having us, Mike. This is great.
Chaos magic. See you guys.
Chaos magic.